Wade Gerstner back with you on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. Joined now by Josh Klingler of the Jayhawk Radio Network. You heard him on the sidelines during the football season. You hear him in the postgame show. And on Wednesday, you heard him as a color commentator with Bob Davis as KU knocking off Holy Cross on Wednesday night at Allen Fieldhouse, 92-59. Josh, good to talk to you again, and had to be a bit of a thrill. I know, you know, it stinks when somebody's sick, not feeling well, like Greg Gurley, and we've had him on the show before, great guy, but still an opportunity for you to do color with Bob Davis and his farewell tour, as this is his last year to be the play-by-play voice of the Jayhawks. That'd be a thrill for him.
Yeah, that's not all bad. But yeah, hopefully Greg is feeling up enough. The bugs that are, I guess, hitting everybody at some point got him the other night. So it was my pleasure to fill in. And yeah, I mean, sitting at Allen Fieldhouse calling a game with Bob Davis, it's not a bad spot to be in.
He actually got paid to do that. Are you kidding me? That's awesome.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we can negotiate that quite yet. Yeah. I'm sure I'll get a little kickback. Not the girly rate, but you know, I'll get my rate again.
Well, not a lot of us get the girly rate. That's true. Hey, let's talk about the Jayhawks, number two team in the land. Of course, rankings don't mean too much, but it's fun for the fans to follow. And KU with the win against Holy Cross. Let's go back to the game on Wednesday. They beat Holy Cross 92-59. Certainly some positives to take out of it. They shot the ball extremely well. Coach Self wasn't really pleased with the defensive effort at times in the game because the 20-point lead went down to 6 early in the second half, and they kind of flipped the switch after a timeout. He got on the players, and then boom, just like that, KU ends up winning, going away. What was your overall take of the performance on Wednesday at home against Holy Cross?
Well, I think we could put this game, and you could change the team name to somebody every non-conference season. I feel like we go through this all the time where Kansas plays lights out for a half, maybe wanes a little bit before halftime, then comes out the second half a little bit flat, and then kicks it in and blows somebody out. I mean, I think we've had that game or a couple of those games like every single year. So they're kind of perfect scenarios for Bill Self and his coaching staff too, that, you know, you're able to play really well, and then you're able to still get on them about something else. And, you know, that's building block type things that we've seen kind of year in and year out from this Kansas team. But, you know, Holy Cross, a little bit different of a team to guard. They play the Princeton-style offense, not one you're going to see all the time. But it does make you kind of focus detail, pay attention to scouting reports, maybe better than you do in some other type games. So it's a good kind of teaching game. Plus with, you know, a couple of the injuries that happened, and very minor ones for Jamari Traylor and Landon Lucas, it gave Bill Self the opportunity to play a little more Sheck Diallo and Carlton Bragg, which I know the fans have been wanting to see more of. They got so much depth this year, Kansas does, that, you know, it's going to be hard, and it's going to continue to be hard to get everybody kind of an equal look and balanced playing time. It's just not going to happen based on numbers. So with a couple of the bigs out the other night, it gave the opportunity for, you know, two of the youngsters to step in and play a little more.
How does Coach Self go about that? Because it's a great problem to have tremendous depth. And when you look at Kansas, more than likely his rotation, most coaches like a 9-player rotation, sometimes as short as 7, maybe 8, but 9 usually at the most. And you have a situation where you've got kind of 5 guards and then 4 posts. That means 2 post players might be not seeing much playing time from game to game.
And really it's 6 post guys that they're battling. I mean, there's 6 guys that can legitimately get playing time. And yeah, they're going to get down to a 9-man rotation, and that's the goal anyway. That's what Bill Self has said. And so on any given night, you might have, you know, only 4 bigs and 5 guards. You might have 4 guards one night and 5 bigs. It's going to be a competitive thing as we move forward. So, you know, it's going to be based certainly from that position on rebounding and defense first and foremost. And then, you know, I just think that, you know, those youngsters that I mentioned, Diallo and Bragg, how can you not be playing those guys, especially, you know, Diallo? And those are the situations you get into when you have these kind of highly recruited guys as well versus upperclassmen. You still kind of have to balance out how you're going to delineate those minutes, because you're always thinking about that next guy, right? Mm-hmm. So if you bring in that next kind of one-and-done type, you're going to have to show them that you're going to play, not be afraid to play young players. But we saw it just 2 games ago against Harvard, got in kind of a tight game, and who did Bill Self lean on? Well, it was the veteran guys. So it's going to be a battle all season long, and the numbers crunch all season long, and not an easy one to be a part of. And even Bill Self has mentioned that. It's not going to be easy to sort out playing time, because there are a lot of guys that probably deserve to play, and this Kansas team is awfully deep.
Kansas did get Brandon Green back, his suspension reduced by a game, and he played well, at least offensively, in the contest against Holy Cross and had 14 points. And it was interesting listening to the locker room show on the way back when we were driving back from the game Wednesday, my son and I from Lawrence, and listening to you guys and your show, and which, by the way, you guys do a terrific job. And listening to Coach Self and listening to what Brandon Green had to say, one of the best quotes I've heard in some time is, you know, what is important to Brandon Green and you, Coach Self, are on the same page. And he said, it's not about being on the same page. It's about being on our page. And then the other comment that Brandon made about something that Self had told him about needing him to win a national championship. And then Self says, well, I never said that. It sounds like it's very interesting to me, and I'm trying to read between the lines a little bit. And correct me if I'm wrong, but this is how I read between the lines. Hey, Brandon's in a good stretch right now. He's doing the things we want him to do, so we rewarded him. He's played. He had his suspension reduced. He played well. But this is a wait-and-see approach because he's been in trouble a couple times before, and you have to wonder if Green gets in trouble again, whatever it might be, whether it's in practice or off the court or on campus or who knows what it might be. I'm not going to speculate, but whatever it might be, that might be the final straw perhaps for Brandon Green?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you never know. I mean, clearly this one was just a, you know, and it's been documented. I mean, a kind of a confrontation, a battle of wills, and they're trying to kind of break Brandon Green a little bit. And I think that comment was directly related to, you know, the reason he was suspended, which was you need to be on our page. We need to be all pulling on the rope in the same direction. And if somebody veers off, you know, that's not helpful for the team. I mean, Brandon's one of the bigger characters on this team too, so you hate to kind of harness somebody who's, you know, passionate and emotional. You know, that's also a part of their game. So you know, there is a little bit of a give and take there. But you know, Brandon Green's a fiery character, and yeah, sometimes you hear what you want to hear when you're having a discussion with somebody, right? So mm-hmm. Bill Self always says that too. It's funny the dynamic of the post game press conference, because we get to talk to the players, and then coach comes in and talks to the media afterwards, and a lot of questions sometimes are so and so said this, mm-hmm. That you told them this, and Bill Self's response normally is I don't know where they get this stuff, but you know, so there's probably some truth in between, you know, the versions of the stories kind of meet somewhere in the middle most of the time, but you know, he's a kid that's going to have to, you know, he's going to have to do his part on the court. And not be, you know, I guess kind of selfish and fit into the team aspect, because, you know, they probably don't have time to wait around for anybody, regardless of who it is at this point, because there's also someone that's going to take your job if you're not ready. So mm-hmm. Brandon Green needs to kind of bring it game in and game out. Terrific shooter, best shooter on the team, there's no doubt about it. And he had a great performance in his return, and he's only missed one shot in three games he's played this season. So he's been really, really good offensively.
Josh Klingler of the Jayhawk Radio Network, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. Let's go back to Cheick Diallo. Seeing him in person for the first time on Wednesday night for me, it was interesting. One, he's not afraid to shoot. He's aggressive.
No. that's been my draw of him right now, that he's making up for lost time.
Yes.
The ball comes to Diallo, it ain't coming back. And we've seen that a time or two with especially young players. So yeah, I think eventually he'll learn, but right now he's a volume shooter, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, he has a nice touch from time to time, but you can see how raw he is. And I know that Coach himself has talked about he wants him to play above the rim, and he's not there yet. I mean, the question I guess I would have is, Cheick Diallo doesn't have to play 30 minutes a game for this team to be good. At the same time, Cheick Diallo, as you mentioned in the post rotation, he's going to be a one and done player perhaps. I'm sitting there looking at him going, wow, he has so much room to grow as a player. Defensively could be very good, but I saw him get lost a couple times on some switches, and defensively got beat for a couple of layups, and he got such a late start because of everything going on with the NCAA. When do you think maybe Diallo can really, and you know, he still had a decent game on Wednesday, but it was Holy Cross, when he can really be a serious factor for this team?
Yeah, I think, you know, through the next several weeks as you head to conference season, we've seen guys make the turn, teams make the turn. Bill Self's been nothing if not just terribly consistent, I should say, in getting teams prepared for conference play and kind of hitting their peak at the right time. Now, this one seems to be just a tad bit behind. You know, they have a lot of veterans on this team, so you'd think they'd be maybe a little further ahead. So I think, you know, they haven't sorted out the rotation yet, and so I just think there's a few things still in play, but I think Diallo is a guy come conference season that they're going to be able to rely on. He does things on the court and in this lineup that are a little bit different than everybody else. Can play above the rim, can block shots, really can do some things defensively that they don't have maybe from other positions. So he's a unique talent for sure. And you're right, he doesn't have to do it on the offensive end. And Bill Self's kind of tempered that from the get-go, saying he needs to be a rebounder and a shot blocker first. And, you know, his points are going to come. And he gets a lot of offensive rebound points. He had a put-back bucket against Holy Cross for a dunk that, I mean, he came flying off the floor in a blur to get a put-back hoop. So he's very raw at this point. But, yeah, he's going to be a guy they can certainly count on. They were good without him. And then getting him into the mix is going to make them even better. But as I mentioned several times already with you, this team's really deep, and that's a good thing.
Full court pressure, it's something that I really wanted to see KU do more of recently. Last year, I thought they had a team that was built for it. This year, I think they've got the perfect team to use full court pressure. And I'm not saying that they should go to the 40 minutes of hell or anything like that. And I was encouraged to see what Coach Self had defensively against Holy Cross with some full court pressure from time to time. It was effective. I know a lot of people get caught up in, well, are you forcing turnovers or not? A full court press can be very effective without forcing turnovers if you rush them and get the pace of play that you want, or it takes forever to get your offense set up. And we saw that quite a few times at Holy Cross. Next thing you know, it's five on the shot clock and they had nothing going offensively. What's your take on what, when you've dealt with Coach Self so far this year? Seems that he might be a little bit more open to doing that, especially when you have the depth that they have, or a guy might get winded. That's okay. We got guys coming on the bench and they could mix that up a little bit and have a little bit more full court pressure this year.
Yeah, I think the shot clock factors into that. You kind of nailed it on the head. And I thought we were going to see a little bit more of that, probably around the country a little bit. Teams are going to, if not press, and Bill Self hates to say press, but he's always willing to say pressure. Mm-hmm. We'll pressure them up the floor. Sometimes I don't know what the difference is, but I just think he doesn't want to, you know, he sticks to his principles. We don't press.
Yeah.
So they are a pressure team, though, to, you know, yeah, you waste the opponent's shot clock a little bit. If you're able to force some turnovers, great, but, you know, more importantly, you're forcing some bad offense or some quick forced offense at the other end. And you're right, this team, although other teams have had it too, but this team definitely has the ability to do that, and you could take advantage of the depth and their length at the guard position specifically. Love when you see Wayne Selden at the front of that press like we did against Holy Cross. Brandon Green's not the greatest defender in the world by any means, but you know, he's got a lot of length, good wingspan. He can be that harasser. I love when you have that guy with the long arms that can play out the front of that. Mm-hmm. They can, you know, waste some team's time using it, but it'll be sporadic. From time to time, you'll see it thrown out there, and I think that's another kind of rite of passage on a Bill Self team every year. We'll see that one game where they dial it up and they're getting steals and layups in a short amount of time, and everybody's saying, why don't they press more? It's kind of a joke that we have that, mm-hmm. you know, every Hawk Talk with Coach Self, at some point of the year, someone will call in and ask whether or not they're gonna press more. It's not necessarily in his nature, but this team has the ability to play, as we've seen, faster than most of his teams.
To you, what is the biggest concern that you have, or maybe Coach Self has told you guys his biggest concern with this team right now? Is it just simply defense, or is there more to it?
You know, I think defensively, he always will say that they can get better, and this team probably can. They're giving up a little bit, you know, higher percentage than they'd like thus far. I think it's scoring around the basket and scoring back to the basket. They still don't have a guy, and Bill Self says it all the time, that they can just throw the ball into and get points. Perry Ellis at times can do that, but he's still kind of undersized for that position. So it's the ability to score around the rim, getting consistent post offense. I think it's going to be something that they look to. But, you know, I think there are teams with a lot more problems. I mean, this is a team that shoots the three very well, that can score from a bunch of different spots. They had six in double figures the other night. So it seems like at times kind of splitting hairs a little bit. I mean, how many teams have that throw it into the post score guy? You know, not a lot around the country. So they have a lot of good parts. So it's getting better on defense and figuring out a way to be a little more effective around the rim.
Oregon State, the opponent tomorrow night for KU at Sprint Center in Kansas City. Tip-off time at 7 o'clock, and folks can listen to it in our area here in north central Kansas on Z96.3 The Lake, the home for the Jayhawks here in this area. And Oregon State, a talented team. Their schedule doesn't look like overwhelmingly tough competition so far, but at the same time, they appear to be a good defensive team, and they've got a guy named Gary Payton. People will remember that name.
Yeah, his dad was outstanding, the glove, and I'm I'm told he will be in attendance tomorrow night as well. So he's going to be around. He's actually, interestingly enough, the uncle, or I guess step-uncle, of a women's player, Asia Robertson. She's a freshman on the Kansas women's team. So there's a little tie-in there to Gary Payton. But yeah, his son kind of does it all for this team. He's averaging better than 16 a game, about 8 rebounds per game as a 6'3 guard, about 4 assists and 3 steals. I mean, he's kind of a do-it-all type guy. So it's a pretty solid team. And coming to Sprint Center rather than Allen Fieldhouse always has that kind of a different dynamic. It's a different crowd. You don't see as many students. It's a home court, but not yet Allen Fieldhouse home court. You got the kind of the interim with classes and everything, and the mind kind of wanders a little bit, finals and holidays. It's always kind of a strangely placed game on the schedule where you're never quite sure what to expect. It doesn't always have the biggest lock-in focus game for some reason. So hopefully they'll be able to keep that together and beat what's pretty good, just a one-loss Oregon State team that's coming on Saturday.
I know it's not a conference game, but Kentucky on January 30th, I already hear a lot of my friends talking about that one. And good luck.
No,
getting,
I don't have tickets.
I was going to say, good luck getting tickets. And
I,
if you do.
I can't get tickets, yeah.
And
that's
if
the question
you,
I'm getting.
Yeah,
more
yeah, that's right. And if you are going to get tickets, it's going to cost you an arm and a leg more than likely.
That's right.
That is a weird time, but and this has happened before with the SEC Big 12 Challenge. It is a weird time because it's sandwiched between an Iowa State and a K-State. Is Kentucky on a Saturday? Has Coach Self talked at all about that scheduling and playing Kentucky at that time of the year?
No, but he has been in favor of the pass of playing the challenge on the same day. Mm-hmm. I think that that it makes it a true event rather than having it kind of scheduled all over the calendar like teams had in the past. I mean, I think what works about the Big Ten ACC one is it's that one night and it draws everybody's attention that all the teams are playing on that one particular night. Now, I think they would all probably like it to be a little bit earlier, but if I remember right, when they first decided on this date, it seemed that that the impression from KU's perspective was, yeah, we'd love to have it earlier, but we understand the Big 12 wants to try to find a unique, its own day to be able to do it. So yeah, there's gonna be no bigger game in the country, I imagine, than that one. So it'll do that. And you know, I guess because it's sandwiched in between two pretty good opponents, they should be up for all of those games rather than, I don't know, no offense, but maybe you see a TCU as one of those games, you might have a letdown, maybe a Texas Tech, that type of thing. You're gonna have, you know, three sets of jerseys in three separate games that are gonna be enough to draw the players' attention.
Josh Klingler of the Jayhawk Radio Network with us today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs. Let's take a look at the Big 12 race. I think the Big 12 is better than last year. I know many people say Big 12 from top to bottom, best conference in America last year. I was one of those that was arguing throughout the season that I thought the Big 12 was a little bit overrated as a whole, because if you're going to look at how good the bottom teams are, usually when you get to tournament time, you're judged on how your best teams fare. And of course, it didn't go so well for the Big 12 last year, with Oklahoma being the team that went the deepest and KU bowing out in the second round, Iowa State bounced early, and so forth and so on. But to me, I think the Big 12 is for real this year. And I look at Iowa State. Oklahoma looks really, really good, and they whipped Villanova the other night. Baylor is a solid team. West Virginia's off to a great start. Texas Tech seems to get better each and every year with Tubby Smith. And don't sleep on Texas with Shaka Smart. I think they'll get better throughout the year and get used to what he wants to run. And, of course, Kansas State's off to a nice start as well. And a lot of people have been sleeping on the Wildcats, and I think they've got some chemistry finally after having tons of chemistry issues last year. How do you sum up the Big 12 here in 2015 and 16?
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed with the top for sure. And it's going to be the same every year. You're going to be judged on how you do in the postseason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the regular season numbers look great. Their scoring looks great. Their record looks great against everybody in the non-conference. But we've seen these things before, and it feels like you have to have the prove it later. But, yeah, Oklahoma, as you mentioned, I think I've lost track now. I think it's like 75 games now that they have started their four of their five starters, the four veteran starters have played together 75 games, something like that. I mean, you just don't have that kind of experience anymore around college basketball. And they got that huge win against Villanova earlier, so that's a big win for them. Iowa State, not as deep as they'd probably like to be, but they're as talented certainly in the starting five as anybody in the conference, and that's turned into a pretty good little rivalry between Kansas and Iowa State. You know, Texas, I'm interested to see kind of long-term what Texas is going to be, because Shaka Smart's style is very different, certainly from what Texas was playing before, and their schedule is really just just really tough. They got North Carolina on Saturday, and they don't back off from anybody. They play one of the more aggressive schedules, much like Kansas does in the non-con. So they've taken their lumps a little bit there, but they're going to be a solid team. West Virginia, to me, is very interesting. They're turning people over at a huge rate right now, so that's kind of a fun team to watch. And you mentioned Kansas State. I think they're better than I thought they would be this year, and really like the freshman, the Wade kid. Certainly with Edwards and Owundu, got a couple of veteran guys that are being asked to kind of step up into a more kind of aggressive role, and they got one loss, and it was to North Carolina, and they had Carolina on the ropes in Kansas City, and probably should have won that game. So you're looking at a K-State team that's probably thinking they have every right to feel like they were unbeaten at this point. So yeah, the league should be good, as we know, and it's not because of where I work, but the road comes through Lawrence until further notice, and I think they will be ready to defend yet another title, and they have every reason to think that they can get one. But there's going to be some competition as usual. It's never been a cakewalk anyway, but this year should be no different. But Kansas wins all their games at home, makes it pretty tough on everybody else.
Is your prediction then to win it outright this year?
I don't know about outright, but I think I think they'll have a piece of it. I don't see anything on this Kansas team that would say they can't win the conference. I think I think Kansas, Oklahoma, and Iowa State. Those are my three to win it. I think some other teams are good, but those are the only three I think that have a shot to win it. So at worst case scenario for the Jayhawks, they share with one of those two. But I think it's a three horse race for the title, but everything else will be very interesting.
Do you think this year is different in regards to how things are going to end up in March and maybe even hopefully into April? You think this team's a little bit different to where it won't be that early exit out of the NCAA tournament and get through the first weekend and then can make a run to the Final Four?
It's just hard to tell.
Sure.
I mean, every year you feel like it is, or I suppose there's plenty of doomsdayers that feel like it's never, right. They're never going to make it out of that first weekend. This is what they do. But, it's so hard to tell. But, I mean, this, if you were to build something as a program in this day and age, I just like the way that this roster is composed. You got some veteran components, you have some talented freshmen, and you have a real good balance of kind of your classes along the way. So if you're looking to build a team, I think this is a pretty good approach to do it. Now, some others have done it other ways. We've seen Duke and Kentucky go really young and have success doing that. But I do like, having some veterans that have been around the block a while that are still hungry for some success with some talented young guys who don't know what they don't know. So, I mean, this team's is built as good as any Kansas team has been in recent years, and not the fully top end talent, but balance. Again, they got 12 guys that can play. They have a legitimate shot to play a night in and night out, and you feel like there's not much of a drop off. So this is a team that's got an opportunity, but we've seen that before. Strange things happen when that tournament starts.
We know how successful the KU men's basketball program is, but there's another team on campus that's having a pretty good year. I'd like to share with folks who that is.
Are you speaking to volleyball?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. What a program Ray Bouchard has built with the Jayhawk volleyball team. I mean, that. They've had an outstanding season and a consistent season. I mean, they shot out of the gates and won a whole bunch of matches early and really never backed down. I mean, they've played really consistent high rate all season long, and they have a great home venue as well that the fans have really turned out and made it a really good home court for the Jayhawks, and he has really built a program, not a season, not a great season, but a program over the last recent year. So they've had a terrific fall and now into winter in volleyball.
28-2 and their only two losses to Texas, and I got La Loyola Marymount coming up tonight out in San Diego, and yeah, they've had a heck of a year. Now I know the football team did not have a good year, 0-12. Davey Beatty, the right guy for this job. I mean, he inherited a horrible situation. What are the feelings going into next year?
I was on the sidelines this year for 0-12, and everybody said, boy, how long a year was it? And I said, you know what? I've felt other years that have been longer and more difficult. This one went really fast, and I think you saw signs of improvement along the way. And no, there's not much way to sugarcoat 0-12 by any means, but they were very shorthanded. I think they played really hard. They never gave in. The attitude was great. As coaching staff's attitude is great. They're positive all season long, and I really enjoyed my time around around the coaches. Now, they got to beef up, you know, recruiting, get some more players in there, and see where they go from here. They got some nice, you know, young players that got a lot of playing time this year. So, you know, hopefully they are a team that's on the rise and get some support as well. And I know you're not going to get much support until you win games. And certainly towards the tail end of the year, fans kind of went into the, oh, here we go again mode. But, you know, I like David Beatty a lot. His energy is infectious. If you get in a room with him, he's going to win you over. And hopefully that'll pay off in winning recruits over when he and his staff get out there on the road and bring more players into this Kansas team.
All right, Josh, time for an off-the-wall question. The holidays just around the corner, Christmas only a few weeks away. What's the worst Christmas gift you have ever received?
Wow, worst Christmas gift I've ever received.
Yeah, I'm bought on book.
That's a good one. I must have been pretty fortunate because nothing stands out.
You are fortunate.
I hope she's not listening, but I did have an aunt that used to give really weird presents all the time that they're like, it's like every year my sister and I would open up our gifts and like, this is strange. What is she thinking? But I remember my sister got one year that was a shoe purse. And it was like a Converse Chuck Taylor that was a purse. It was very, very odd. So I would say something from my aunt. I hope she's not out there listening somewhere, but she used to give weird gifts, but I don't have anything that stands out, but I'm sure if I did, it was from her.
Okay. Well, for me, it would be my grandmother-in-law, whatever it be, the grandmother on my wife's side. She would give us socks, but they had like elves or Santa on them, and they're socks I would never, ever wear in public.
Yeah.
Those were ones. And then a year later, my brother-in-law sucked up to her, and he was wearing the socks, and then she asked me where mine were, and I never wore them at all.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a sweater or two that falls in that same category from a relative that, yeah, you got busted not wearing.
Isn't there an ugly sweater thing that they're doing? I think they promoted that last night.
One of the upcoming games they're trying to do at Allen Fieldhouse. They set the record for ugly sweaters. Allen Fieldhouse is a tough place to wear a sweater, too. It's always hot in that building, man. Oh. You're gonna go and sweat, but wear your ugly sweater. I think it's I want to say the game on the 19th. Is ugly sweater day, so there you go.
Put a lot of perfume, cologne, and deodorant on to cover up all the sweat if you're going to be wearing those.
I know we're going to need Gurley back by that game for sure because I'm sure he's got an ugly sweater or two in his closet.
I guarantee he does. Hey, Josh, we appreciate the time. Keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us on the Sports Ticket today.
All right, thanks for the kind words. Anytime.
Josh Klingley of the Jayhawk Radio Network, our guest today on the Sports Ticket.